We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
This is a top to what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see, the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11,
oh,
11,
and most
11,
of the amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up, all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show right here on The Horn. It's Boxed Up with John Fox, where we turn the conversation to conservation. Boxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and CityNet, citynet.net. B1 Louder by ringing 877-4 head on. That's 877-443-2366, or use your free minutes by dialing direct 304-658-5453. Yeah. Your host, the ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox.
Hey, helps to turn that thing on. How you going, everybody? Welcome to Foxed Up. It's about almost 4.5 minutes past, 9 p.m. in the United States. It's just after 11 a.m. here Monday morning in Australia. Welcome aboard. Well, it was a replay last week. I probably should have figured that out sooner, but I didn't. But there you go. Wow. not exactly sure where to start here. Do I start with a chicken story? Do I get straight into the news thing? Do I talk about insane run of luck on eBay. I guess I'll go straight to the serious news. I guess it was yesterday morning. I get up and I'm doing my morning check the blogs thing. And I see that, you know, in response to the Supreme Court decision last year, the EPA is now going to begin regulating greenhouse gases. Fucking hoorah! This is fundamental stuff. As far as the United States, as far as a country now openly says, yeah, global warming's an issue, climate change, whatever you want to call it, we are very much to blame for it. And the Environmental Protection Agency should be regulating these things and, you know, beginning to regulate power plants, blah, 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 blah. So there's already a draft, a discussion paper legislation set out, which we'll get into in a minute. Previously, you know, when it came to climate change in the United States, you know, we weren't even allowed to get to the gate to start. This is actually, we're at the gate now. And we now have, you know, basically discussion paper level legislation, and they're trying to move really fast on this. And of course, the thing that I automatically, when I go and grab the PDF of the document, which there's links to all this stuff on today's show post at Foxed Up, foxdup.headonradionetwork.com, I start looking for all the weasel words, and of course, one of the first ones that, you know, you have to go for is carbon sequestration, which there's a huge section on carbon sequestration, which, you know, you knew that there was going to be. But I've been, I only actually opened up the file about an hour or so ago, and I've been scanning through. And what they're looking to do, from what I can see, is set up a very limited window of viability. In other words, I think within 180 days, an actual test sequestration model needs to be ready to go to try and test and to develop. And when that 180 days passes, what, you know, and it's proven, it's shown that at the moment it's never been done and we don't have the technology to do it. But the wording, so I'll get into it in a little bit, just so sets up that we have to do this, and why we would go and waste so much energy and resources on a technology that seems to be going really nowhere. I find a little concerning. Now, you know, on the weekend that we get this, you know, statement from the EPA saying that they're going to begin to regulate greenhouse gases. And the Guardian's got, there's a link to a Guardian piece here where they basically talk about that, you know, the environmental groups and whatnot say, hey, you know, the United States is finally open for business when it comes to discussion on this. And they say here, the Obama administration took a bold step towards limiting the gases that cause global warming today after formally declaring that such emissions are a danger to public health. The official finding by the Environmental Protection Agency that carbon dioxide and five other gases threaten public welfare sets the stage for regulation of emissions from coal-fired power plants and for forcing U.S. car manufacturers to make cleaner and more fuel-efficient vehicles. Environmentalists celebrated the ruling as the most definitive break to date with 8 years of climate denial under George Bush. The EPA said that science about the dangers posed by greenhouse gases was compelling and overwhelming, and that the increase of such gases was the unambiguous result of human emissions. Hello, for all these jackasses that are still playing the denial game, can we put it to bed now? The U.S. government body responsible, who should be responsible for such things, has just come out clearly and said, hello, there is no doubt. But yet, without, you know, immediately, this John Boehner guy, I mean, this guy really is just absolutely pathetic. I can't believe it. I'm hearing about frickin' cow farts again. Check this crap out from this week with Snuffleupagus, or whatever Bob calls him. But this is just amazing. I mean, no wonder we can't have a real conversation on this issue and actually get anywhere when people who are supposed to be part of this discussion speak like children. I mean, this guy, the look on his face is just kind of like, can I go to recess now? And this is just amazing.
So, what is the responsible way? That's my question. What is the Republican plan to deal with carbon emissions, which every major scientific organization has said is contributing to climate change?
George, the idea that carbon dioxide is a carcinogen that is harmful to our environment is almost comical.
Okay, first. I mean, this just shows you how you send people out there with talking points who don't even have a clue of what the fuck they're talking about. Nowhere in any of this do they say that carbon dioxide is a carcinogen or that greenhouse gases are carcinogens. This is all about a warming planet, you stupid, stupid, stupid orange motherfucker. I mean, please. What are you, 10? It gets better.
Every time we exhale carbon dioxide. Every cow in the world, when they do what they do, you've got more carbon dioxide.
Oh, bodily function. Duh.
I mean, this guy is like one of the leading lights of his party. You're kidding me, right? This guy is out there, and we're back to cow farts. I mean, really? But, you know, the old boy in the chair's not going to give up and try and bring some reality back to this, but man, fucking Boehner ain't having none of it.
And so I think it's clear we've had climate change over the last 100 years.
Climate change?
Listen, it's clear we've had change in our climate. The question is, how much does man have to do with it, and what is the proper way to deal with this?
Hello, the EPA said. this is just mad. I mean, the EPA said the science about the dangers posed by greenhouse gases was compelling and overwhelming, and that the increase of such gases was the unambiguous result of human emissions. I mean, these guys will just say any bullshit And then watch, he does it. He does the spin him around with a bunch of crap, meaningless shit, and then change the subject and hit a few talking points on the way out.
We can't do it alone as one nation. If we got India, China, and other industrialized countries not working with us, all we're going to do is ship millions of American jobs overseas.
But it sounds...
Okay. So here it's segue into, you know, same bullshit from what's left of this party. Now we're going to swing it into, oh, you're throwing people's jobs away. You know, trying to go on the most natural, real insecurity out there today. Talk nothing about opportunities made. Now, these people, I mean, it's this juvenile. I mean, I'm called, you know, people tell me all the time to grow up, you know, cut your hair, grow up. But I mean, you know, that doesn't hold much water when you have people like this saying completely stupid, uneducated things. And then trying to degrade the issue into cow farts. But here he goes on the jobs thing. So, you know, I mean, it's just he's trying to go for gut reaction stuff. It's amazing. But meanwhile, he's just gone around and he's just gone and contradicted himself kind of two ways running by first saying that he disagreed with carbon dioxide being a greenhouse gas problem, but then saying, yeah, there was a problem, but we need to see the best way to fix it. You know, these guys are like cake and eat it too, motherfuckers. Sorry, these guys have me riled up. But, I mean, this is just absolute, complete, and utter nonsense.
Like, from what you're saying, that you don't believe that the Republicans need to come up with a plan to control carbon emissions. You're suggesting it's not that big of a problem, even though the scientific consensus is that it is an issue.
The question is, what is the proper answer and the responsible answer?
And what is the answer? That's what I'm trying to get at.
George, I think everyone in America is looking for the proper answer. We don't want to raise taxes $1.5 to $2 trillion like the administration is proposing, and we don't want to ship millions of American jobs overseas. And so we've got to find ways to work toward this solution to this problem without risking the future for our kids and grandkids.
So you are committed to coming up with a plan?
I think you'll see a plan from us, just like you've seen a plan from us on the stimulus bill and a better plan on the budget.
The budget with no numbers. The budget with no numbers. I can't wait to see these guys come up with their alternative greenhouse gas emissions plan. I just can't wait to see it. I mean, that's just ludicrous. And, you know, all this talk about China and India, you know, China and India, the bit of burr in the saddle that they've been on this issue, like, you know, during the Kyoto process and whatnot, has all been about when the United States plays ball, we'll play ball. So I think we go on to the next stage with Obama having about 10 months to work on plans for what to do domestically to go in and say, okay, we're ready to become part of this process, which then basically corners India and China into coming and playing ball. So, buddy, Johnny baby, You're just not getting it, man. And I was a little disappointed to read how far climate change is still low on the totem pole of top issues for American voters. I actually thought it was better than the numbers that I read, and they were pretty depressing. Now, I don't know how that poll was worded, but, you know, the International Panel on Climate Change, Mr. Stern, you know, just said a few months ago that, you know, all this international, you know, monetary problems cannot be any reason to not go, full boat ahead on dealing with climate change, because the countries that come up with the innovations, the real new innovations, are the ones that are going to end up being best set. So everybody should be getting on this. I just, you know, to have, it really just proves that the Republicans have nothing. They have absolutely nothing except for the word no. It's all they've got. And, you know, there's... You know, there's moments where some of those one world government theorists, you know, you kind of have to look and wonder if there is, you know, someone writing the script for everywhere. Because I've said it before, what's going on between the Democrats, you know, between the administration and the Republicans is exactly what's going on here between the government and the opposition. It's the same arguments, it's the same, seems to be almost like the same pantomime. Gail was stumbling around the other day and she came across a comparison of two speeches, pre-Iraq war speeches. One given by Johnny Howard, Australia's own Johnny Howard. The other one was by the Canadian Prime Minister. And they were virtually word for word verbatim, 90%, and it's just like going, wow, that really was a sell job, wasn't it? Everyone was given the script to read from, you know, and Howard just throws in a few, you know, Mr. Speakers into it. But, you know, I watched this, you know, just really, really stupid and immature standoff by the right wing in both of these countries that are now in opposition for the first time in a long time. Now, I understand, you know, when you're in opposition, you got to be in opposition. But, I mean, these guys really have nothing. They're completely bereft of ideas or even grasps on concepts. And I know I keep going back about cow farts, but I mean, really. You know, and if I'm not even mistaken, the original thing about the cow farts wasn't about carbon dioxide. It was about methane, which is a whole lot worse greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide is. Just, we talk about carbon dioxide because it's the most prevalent of them. It's the one that's so easily measured. It's the one that we pump the most of out there. Methane's just horrible, though. I think it's 6 or 8 times worse than carbon dioxide as far as actual global warming potential. You know, and with all this sea ice that's been vanishing at the poles, you know, we've been having these massive methane stores that have been actually stored under, you know, miles and miles of ice just being
released in huge plumes. I think we're going to see more of that stuff. But, you know, I just... I look at this John Boehner character, and you gotta go to today's blog post. ELO's kicked up a great image for today. But, I mean, John Boehner, he looks more and more like I don't know, a 12-year-old up there, and it's all a little bit of, don't take from me, don't take from anyone, You know, and automatically jumps on the tax thing, and it's like, you know, that's been so frickin' debunked, you know, with the numbers are already, you know, could be the biggest middle-class tax cut in history. But it, you know, it's just amazing. It's like, you know, they're the party of the selfish brats of America. The spoiled little bitches of America. And, you know, they've really got nothing. I mean, just, you know, you watch what went down with all those, you know, tea party thing, tea bag things. They got nothing. They got nothing but just kind of, you know, hate. You know, the last holler of the maniac screaming meanies. but, you know, the guy's just a bit insane, he is. We're going to take a break. Do a bit of the progressive. And I haven't listened to this album in years. I don't know why it came up, but it did. Throwing Copper live. It's a great album. Here we go. Just kind of how I feel about them at the moment. White Discussion. You listen to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network. America's liberal voice. We'll be right back.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Well, someone tossed a tea bag on the front stoop of the Progressive yesterday. I'd seen two busloads of the baggers drive up across the street near the Capitol here in Madison, Wisconsin, but I didn't know they were going to leave their calling card behind. I don't dismiss this phenomenon as a mere stunt by Fox News or some fake grassroots effort by the Republican Party and their corporate bosses. No, there's something real going on out there, and it's not pretty. One person at the Madison rally held a sign that said, "Obama's the Antichrist." I'm sure there were others like that at teabag parties elsewhere, and that's what scares me. Fox News and the Republican Party are playing with fire here. Already there's a heightened threat from far right-wing white supremacist groups in this country, so much so that Homeland Security has alerted the public. And when the fulminators on the right-wing airwaves gin up the rhetoric against Obama, they're essentially recruiting for these groups. Let's face it, there's a lot of nuts out there and a lot of guns to go with them. By inciting these hate groups, Fox and Newt Gingrich and Dick Armey may be loosing forces they'll later regret. Teabags are harmless. Bullets aren't. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Welcome back to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network. A little bit of Screaming Jets there, a little bit of live before that, and we're going to be doing some Jim White later. And I'll stop that thing and then come back over to this thing. So I'm hoping to get a phone call a little bit later in the show from our good buddy Sarge, because I'm being told that Sarge went to one of the tea parties during the week or on tax day or whatever the hell it was. And I'd be very interested to hear that. And if you want to get in on things and you know, you got something to say about the EPA stuff, whatever, 304-574. Oh, we got one already. Welcome to Foxed Up. Who we got?
Mr. John Fox.
Hey, mate. How are you?
Yeah. Short time, no talk, or something like
something
that.
Something like that.
Yeah, something like that. Did you check out that Saul Williams interview I sent you?
I actually couldn't get into it.
You couldn't get into it?
No. But, yeah, I did see that you sent that to me, and I'm actually dying to check that out. Because what's the name of the new album called?
I guess it's not so much a new album. I guess it's like a little project. It's called Dead MC Scrolls.
Right.
Yeah.
It sounds fascinating just from that, knowing what we know of the guy.
Oh, by the way, the volume on your microphone is down a bit.
Okay.
So you know.
We'll fix that. How's that? That a bit better?
Yeah, that's a little better.
All right. But what, no, so I haven't, I'm unprepared there, man. What else you got?
Oh, no, that was just, I just wanted to know if you checked it out, but, yeah, so what's your take on the whole torture thing, the whole torture memos?
I'm really pissed off, to tell you the truth. What's his name? Jonathan Turley, who's on MSNBC fairly often, and he's a constitutional legal scholar. And he's just, I think, George Washington University, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, I think he sums it up best that, yeah, we are obligated to look back. We are obligated to see if there was law broken and to prosecute those people because we have in the past. And I think that this then, if with what Obama's done with giving cover to those that, you know, set this policy up. He's basically giving them justification and has put the legal stamp of approval on it. He legitimized it.
I was listening to Mike Malloy, and this guy made a really insightful point about how Obama had to make a trade-off regarding this, and unfortunately, the future of our country has been put up at stake for this trade-off, which was with health care and so forth. One of the points that he made was, with these war crimes, it would implicate some Democrats on our side of the aisle as well.
Yeah, I think that that's a real worry.
Yeah. And then that leaves, since we're talking about the Democrat and Republican issue, you really have to check out the an outstanding interview. And when I say outstanding, like, you got to put it right to the top. It's David Simon who created and wrote The Wire.
Yeah.
And he does an hour interview with Bill Moyers, and it's on this subject about why nothing ever changes. It's amazing.
You know, I go through waves of, you know, how much I buy into that it's all, you know, it's all just a charade, you know, the whole
yeah.
process, you know, and, you know, when I watch and I see people bending on things like, you know, like this torture thing. I really, this one's really pissing me off because, you know, Obama doesn't have to do the investigating. Obama doesn't have to do the trials. But the administration can kind of get the hell out of the way of Congress and the Justice Department and let
mm-hmm.
them do their job. Which is, I mean, what the hell do you think oversight is? And there's enough evidence out there of not just, you know, the need to look further. I mean, we've had, it's like really concrete evidence that we tortured people. We've already kind of apologized to the world that we tortured people. So if we are already admitting that these things were done, you have to go back and actually hold to account those who did it. Otherwise, you're just telling future generations, yeah, go for it. We say we shouldn't do it, but fuck, we're not going to do anything to you. Just go for it. Go for your life, you know. Just make sure you get something out of what you do. It's bizarre.
Here's the other thing. Here's the other thing, the torture crimes that was brought to me by, I've been talking to Bob Alexander at the guy who started the Prosecute George Bush site.
Yeah.
And I talked to him on the phone, and he said, do you notice that you're talking about torture instead of murder? And I said, you're right. You're right. You're absolutely right. That's exactly what happened. There is no more, because if you notice with the Spain trials, with the trials that they had going on in Spain, they leak out this information from the torture memos, and right at the same time that the Spain trial is about to get started, and it just shows you how everyone's trying to distract you into another direction.
Well, and it's really weird because at the same time, you know, within days of this all happening, you know, Obama releases, you know, tons of Bush era memos. And it's
right.
and you know, so, you know, I feel like I'm getting kind of spat at a little bit when you know, you go and you release stuff that basically says that everything that we thought was true and these guys were crooks, but we're not, you know, we're going to put up some barricades to keep, you know, people that could be held accountable from being held accountable. Sorry, you're really starting to play too far from what you sold us. And that's being honest about knowing that the guy always was a centrist.
Look what they're doing to Don Siegelman. You know, on the Ring of Fire today, when Robert Kennedy was bringing up and talking to a lawyer, he asked, "What is going through Eric Holder's mind to not take up these cases like Don Siegelman? He's about to face jail time again."
And isn't there a lot more evidence of political witch huntery going on there? You know, I mean, I understand the guy was a bit of a meathead, you know, when it came to the whole prostitute thing. But
yeah.
I mean, and that's just, you know, I really don't care. I really couldn't care less, you know.
Yeah.
But he was someone that the Republicans were scared of.
I look at it, and I've thought about it for so long, and then I'm telling you, John, when you watch the David Simon thing, it'll put it all in perspective for you, exactly what's going on in this country. One of the things I'll just mention one of the things he talks about in it. One of the things he talks about in it is the fact is why it never changes in the inner cities for the drug rules. Why the institutions play along and know that legalizing and keeping these drugs in the inner cities is devastating to all of these areas, and
right.
why the Democrats do it. And Bill Moyers asked him specifically, he said, "Why do you think they do it?" And he said, "Being a reporter for the Baltimore Sun and the time that I spent as a journalist, you come to some harrowing conclusions, and it's this. There is no political capital in reversing it. None." And then Bill asked him, he said, "So people are just left to die?" And he's like, "There's no political capital in it. People are just left there to die." And then it makes me think about exactly the same situation we're in this country right now. How many people are going to suffer and will continue to suffer? And is anybody going to reverse it? I don't know, but the news with the war crimes, the torture, I'm not very. I don't care if it's not been 100 days or however many days it's been now.
Mm.
That's not the point. The point is, someone said it on Daily Coast Best. They said he's a constitutional law professor, for God's sake.
Yeah. Absolutely.
He has to give us the sign. It's his obligation.
Yeah.
Do it in code, man. I don't care. But you're making people freak out right now all over this country.
Yeah, I think this is probably the first major thing that has really gone up against what he campaigned on directly. I mean, this is a fundamental one, you know.
Let me tell you the first thing I thought of. When they said the high-speed rail, we're going to build a high-speed rail, I thought, oh, is this to get to our surf jobs a lot quicker now? Honestly, John, that's what I thought. David Simon, he put it in perspective for me, the gentrification of the cities, the way the institutions work in tandem with each other, same with the politicians, they work in tandem with each other, and how you can't break out of that cycle. Because there's no money to be made if you break out of that cycle.
So, you know,
that's what I'm talking about.
Well, because what you say that this guy says, you know, that there's no political capital in actually helping people in the city. So
none.
So if that's the case, you know, that just has to, you know, that the. Just goes to prove that these people don't represent us. They're representing other interests. If the political capital that you could give them, they don't see.
That's right. And, you know, it goes to there are so many great scenes in The Wire, but, you know, one of the greatest scenes that they had was they explained the symbolicness of a chessboard. And it's a drug dealer, and he's explaining the positions. He goes, these are the pawns, these guys move one step forward, one step. That's all they can do. They can move one step forward. He said the queen can go anywhere she wants. The king, he stays right there. And by the time the end of it, he explained the game. They realized at the end that they were all pawns too, but they didn't want to admit it to each other. And that's the thing that Simon he transcended. Like he got a lot of flack talking about the Baltimore cops in this manner because they thought that he was being too hard on him, and they didn't understand that this was a love letter, and with love, John, comes serious a serious introspective look.
Oh yeah.
And there will be criticism with love because in some respects pain is love.
Oh yeah. Absolutely. I
so John, we're left John, we're left at a puzzling point here, and then the clock is ticking for our for movements in this country. And then I just gotta ask you, what do you think's next? If no one does anything regarding these issues of prosecution, I don't have any confidence in any of our legislation.
I just don't see how we can stick our head in the sands the way that we did, like, you know, after Watergate, you know, to just kind of, you know, and you know, SNL and things like that, and just, you know, kind of Iran-Contra. All, you know, and just continue to let these things happen. And I can only, because it's like you keep sweeping it under the rug, and every time it pops up again, it's worse. And
exactly.
We've just gotten through 8 years of absolute just shit.
Mm-hmm.
And if we end up allowing the Republicans to you know, pick the shit out of everything until it's useless, and, you know, allow, you know, AstroTurf crap like tea parties take up so much of our airtime, and then not actually go and correct the wrongs that we've admitted to.
Right.
Man, you know, I'm at a loss of trying to think of what the hell is next, because, you know, does that end up going to all-out anarchy, or are we just all so fat and drug-fucked, you know, if you read the reports on how much pharmaceuticals are being dumped in the water at the moment, are we all just so stupid, lazy, and drug-fucked that we're just going to let them continue to run over us?
Well, let me tell you, John, a harrowing, sobering wake-up call for a lot of people who think that this is just going on with Republicans. I've been talking to Bob Alexander on the phone, and he and as you know, he's in charge of the prosecute George Bush movement,
right?
With the Bugliosi books that he sent out.
Yeah.
And you know, whenever he tells me of how many letters he wrote, and the fact that none of these progressive heroes and icons and mascots, they never wrote him back, it just makes me sick to my stomach. They didn't even write him back, and here's a guy who raised 18. Let me say this clear for the people listening. This guy raised $18,000 on one radio station to ship all of these books out to every single district attorney in the country on how to prosecute George Bush for murder. If that doesn't deserve any acknowledgement, I don't know what does.
Well, you know, I mean, it sounds very much like, you know, the battle that we've gone on with this network, you know, for ages. You know, you get all the lip service, but then when it comes to actually getting dirty, whether it's
right,
financial support or actual action or actually doing something instead of just fucking talking about it, it all just vanishes. It's just poof. Where'd they go? Wait, there was just a guy here blowing smoke up my ass 30 seconds ago, I swear, you know, and poof, gone. And, you know, I don't know what the problem is on the progressive side. you know, when it comes to regret it making all this noise, but it's like why we can't get these people that could actually kick these things over into something real, you know, what makes them too, I don't know, wimpy to take the step. I mean, it just blows me away.
Well, you know, John, I'm taking the step right now with the I've set up the Twitter.
Yep.
For twitter.com prosecute GW Bush / prosecute GW Bush. If you type that all as one word, you'll see where we're at right now. And I've decided that the next step, I'll probably will be calling into the Mike Malloy Show Friday.
Right.
And I'm kind of nervous about doing that because it's Mike Malloy.
Yeah.
But Bob told me to write some notes and stuff like that. So if people want to know what's up with the Prosecute George W. Bush movement, I guess all I could tell you is I've decided to take it head on, pun intended.
Mm.
And I've decided to go to all the network shows, John. I'm going at it. I'm going to go
Good.
To Tom Hartman. I'm going to go to Mike Malloy. I'll tell you what inspired me. This Ashton Kutcher thing where he reached 1 million.
I mean, think about
it for a second. He reached 1 million on Twitter just by and he raised $100,000 for no malaria. I did send him a message and I said, would you be interested in retweeting the Prosecute GW Bush movement? But obviously he gets a lot of messages.
Yeah, and you never know who at what time is actually the one going through those messages.
I do want to say though that we're in the process of looking for a celebrity. That's the next step because we live in people, we have to stop pretending this. We have to stop pretending. A celebrity-driven culture, you will need a celebrity to anchor you. It's that simple. We're looking for a celebrity right now. I'm going to come up with like I said, John, I'm going to keep you posted on all the latest, but, you know, that brings me to another interesting point of radio, and I thought you would find this interesting, but did you know Alex Jones hooked up his radio show to Tom Hartman's for an hour last week?
You're kidding.
And it was I'll tell you what, it was surreal because the more and more Alex is saying of what's happening in this government, what's happening in this country, is it's almost mirroring, not exactly, but it is mirroring with what Tom is saying. And he did get him, and they did talk about the global warming and the issues with the environment.
Mm-hmm.
And Alex was a little bit, but he was cordial and he was respectful to the callers. And I got to tell you, if you can, I'll send you a link to it and just check out that. That hour that he's guesting.
I'd be curious because you know, I mean, I'm so of a couple of different minds when it comes to Alex Jones. One, I think. He's a champion of the independent, you know, media guy. I mean, I think he's built quite a machine, you know, gets out there and does talk about some, you know, sticky stuff. I think sometimes he gets a little too far in some things. And what bugs me a little bit is, you know, I haven't seen the most recent of his films, but, you know, as soon as Obama was in, you know, he had Obama content. You know what I mean? And so, I mean, there is a bit of that, you know, shuckster, you know, kind of thing of selling stuff. But that selling stuff also gives him the money to go out and do some of the things that he does. So, you know, I kind of understand and can see some justification there. To hear him with Tom Hartman, because, you know, Tom would be a hard one to one fool and, you know, wouldn't be able to railroad him, you know, and I don't think that he'd feel inclined to just because of who Hartman is.
The thing that people didn't, I think will be surprised by is it really did work when they did link up shows for an hour and the guests, and Alex was respectful to the callers even if they disagreed with him.
Yeah.
And Tom even took some of Alex's callers.
Oh, and they would share some listeners. I would think that they'd have to share some listeners, you know? I mean...
Right. But here's what it goes to show. Here's... For those people who I think one of the problems with Alex, obviously, is a guy like that is obviously coming from a dysfunctional family household, and he has issues of control, especially with the government.
Yeah.
And misconceptions of telling somebody or ordering someone what to do. And it really does come through in his ideology.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, it's the same thing that happened. I guess I could say he's like I don't know, he minded a sensational wrestling announcer or something.
Yeah, he is. I mean, there's one bit in one of his films that I love where he's just out on a corner with a bullhorn. And,
yeah.
You know, everything that he's, you know, spouting was, you know, pretty well on, you know, and he'd ask questions of people and you'd see people showing just actually how ignorant they are about how certain some things work. And
right.
I totally dig that. I think that, you know, going out there and kind of screaming from the rooftop, I think that takes a hell of a lot of balls, and I think he actually does pretty well by it.
I think one of the things that really set off the I know you've been paying attention the last few weeks about the Prison Planet audience in InfoWars is that when Alternet and Ross Story put Alex's name in there as being for gun militias and doing a violent takeover, which is basically what they were saying in the articles.
Right.
I thought that was the wrong way to print a story up like that. Because I don't know what Alex's motives are for this country. I don't think anyone really knows. Because you have that theater in front of you.
Yeah. I think he's driven a lot by one, obviously a natural just yearning, you know, or ability to do media. You know, I mean, that's kind of what we hope any of us, you know, start with that want to do anything like this. And I do think he knows how to make a buck. And I'm not actually saying that for, you know, as necessarily a bad thing. Actually, not at all. You know, there are things along those lines that this network could be better at, and we could be in better financial shape than we are.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he's got a bit of a machine. He's got some gear. He's got some people. And, you know, more power to him. But, yeah, I you know, there's that line from The Disposable Heroes, you know, when you hear a man ranting, you know, take everything in context. And I think that you have to do that. And like you said there, you know, you go a little psychoanalyzing saying, you know, bit of control issues, blah, 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 as he was a kid. Yeah, you know, you take that on board when you watch him and yeah, it can make it seem a whole lot less kind of, you know, insane at its more loose moments.
So what do you think regarding the Obama administration, since everyone is so at a crossroads moment right now, what do you think we can sacrifice, and what do you think we can't sacrifice? It's obvious we're not going to – I know you know this is coming, and everyone else knows this is coming, but that's one of the reasons why I'm on the Prosecute Bush train, because of the fact that I know – I literally know there's going to be no criminal, there's going to be no trial, there's going to be no hearings, because it is going to bring down, it would bring down a lot of Democrats. But they should have known better. I don't know how to say it.
I think
you play with people's lives.
It's fake, man. I really think just, you know, regardless of party, regardless of anything, for the country's sake, if we don't actually for once go and clean house, there's still a cancer there. And, you know, if you know, I we'll just be setting it up, you know, and this is always that one of those fears, you know, and presidents, it's been this way with presidents, you know, throughout history, is even when, you know, a new president, you know, inherits power his predecessor, you know, somehow created, even if he disagrees with them, he's very, you know, he's never likely to actually give them up. And I see that cycle happening with Obama. You know, yeah, I won't do it, but I'm not going to actually get rid of the power to be able to do it. It's just, it's this thing that's happened for years, you know, I mean, since the founding of the nation, that, you know, you never get a president to relinquish any power. And so, I mean, we have to investigate, we have to prosecute. Now, I think Congress could still do their job. I just think this sends out, one, the wrong message, and two, you know, there's also, you know, in the wording of what they said about protecting, you know, people from prosecution, it's vague on whether it's the top brass or anyone involved, you know, who it's actually covering is not exactly clear, but that could be intentionally vague. Yeah, I think it's the time bomb that will destroy us politically if we don't deal with it.
And that brings me back to, again, why what Bob Alexander is doing regarding it is our only, I hate to say it, but it is our only chance with a criminal prosecution. A federal prosecution is never, ever, ever, ever going to happen. That's why all of those DAs, they have that book on their desk right now.
Yeah.
And by the way, I guess the update is we're expecting a response sometime in May. So, people, I'll keep you posted on that.
Right on, man. Right on. Because I totally agree. You know, I've been trying to, you know, give this guy some time, because there's, you know, no one's ever had to inherit such a bucket of shit.
Right.
And. But this one, I think this whole, you know, and whether it's playing party politics or not, of just, you know, of trying to shut the Republicans up on something and just saying, look, I'm not going to go, you know, but let us get something done. But I that doesn't play with me either, because I think he played too much bipartisan ball in the beginning, which he had to. But it's now time to start cramming things down their throats, which this EPA. Declaration actually does, because this sets up a thing where if Congress now doesn't get a climate change policy together, the EPA will do it through regulation, which it can do, and nobody gets to vote on it. So it you know, I see good things there, but it can't overshadow this thing, a fundamental issue of justice, constitutional law. I really think that should be the thing that we should be hammering at Obama and say, hey, man, you know, just seriously, on this one, you gotta, you know, no one's buying that. And it just doesn't play. And if, you know, you think you're such a fucking scholar, well, then how the hell can you back this concept? I just, you know, this is where, like, Turley nailed, you know, and he's been...
John, I hate to say the T word, but a lot of this administration, I'm not blaming Obama, but any people, officials of the administration who are blocking this because they're afraid of some blowback, to me, they're guilty of treason.
Oh, yeah. I can definitely see that. See, this is where I sometimes wonder, you know, there are a whole lot of people in our government that aren't looking out for the interests and the security of the United States. I don't believe.
Imagine imagine the people who are serving in the military right now, and they're finding out people who believe in the American way of regarding with no torture, and they find out of all these incredibly detailed, sickening memos, and the person who wrote these memos isn't even held accountable for.
He's a district freaking court judge. He's one step away from the Supreme Court. How dare we allow someone like that to, you know, be making decisions about, you know, everyday Americans? Hell no. Impeach his ass. I'm hearing that there's calls, you know, trying to get some sort of impeachment movement on that guy. And I think that should be done. I mean, look, it's been shown that this guy wrote politically lubricating memos. Or legally lubricating memos. You know? I mean, come on. That break international law. And ended up causing the deaths of people. That would happen.
I feel like right now, especially with what Bob Alexander has done, and it's been like 5 or 6 months, we're going on a 6 month. Any of these bloggers that he wrote to, John, this is what I hate about this crap. Any of these bloggers that he wrote to, they could have mentioned it. And they knew what he had done. He had explained it. And they knew that he wasn't asking for money. He was just asking for this story to be heard. And none of those bloggers, none that he reached out to. Let me tell you something. He was at the signing for Amy Goodman. And she signed his book. And he said, yeah, by the way, I really love that piece that you did on Vincent Bugliosi. And she looked up and then she's like, oh, thank you. And he said, I don't know if you know this, but I have a movement. And we raised $18,000. And we sent out a book to every district attorney in the country. And her answer was, oh, I read that. None. No response. This is what I'm talking about. This kind of bullshit. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I'm shifting gears now, John, because I see what's happening. I see how many people have just shown their true colors regarding this issue. Because they don't think it's going to be that big, or they don't want to get attached to something that controversial. I don't know what it is. Maybe because it's not their story.
Or, you know, afraid to rock the boat too much. And it's like, what the hell do you think we've been doing, you know, for the past few years? You know, we've been just hacking away at the boat.
Right. And the way I look at it is this, and for people trying to explain for me to paint you a picture of what it's like, it is like rowing upstream. There is absolutely no cooperation regarding this issue, and I hate to tell people this, but a lot of the bloggers. Let me say this: even Keith Olbermann, he has that story, John. He has that story, and their team isn't touching it. Wait a minute. Just to mention that someone raised $18,000. Let me put this clear for people listening. $18,000 on one radio show. 95% of the fundings came from that in less than a month.
Right.
I don't know what to tell you other than
there's
a lot of people who believe in progress.
Well, Obermann's interviewed Bugliosi a number of times, hadn't he?
See, this is what's boggling the mind. Why would you not have... See, I'd understand if it was an engaging story, but he sat at his home with his family, for God's sake, and he mailed out all these books, John, in one day. He saw a vision. He had a vision in his mind. He had goals to attend to. He met those goals. He's not asking for money anymore. I think this is what scares people. There's no monetary tie to it.
Right.
We got to raise money. We have to do this. I think when people say, well, if there's not any money to be made from this story, I don't think we want to touch it. And you guys want to do what? You want to criminally prosecute the President of the United States? But see, you know, John, it's that I'm literally reaching out to bloggers who are like, who don't even get that, like, at the least traffic, and I'm still trying to convince them to run the story. That's what I'm trying to tell people. That's where we're at. None of those progressives, I don't care if people on here idolize them or not. Listen to me right now, people. They turned their back on us. And they here's the other crazy thing, John. They don't even want to warrant a response. That's how damn scared they are.
You know,
this is what I'm talking about. This is so juvenile, John. I mean, all it does is pick up a damn phone and call Bob Alexander on the phone and tell him why you don't want to run this story. To me, it's a good special interest story. He got his family involved, mailing out 18,000 books for democracy and for the Constitution.
Well, yeah.
What better story do you want?
You know, you can't get that covered, but, you know, you can get an entire right-wing network to bullshit and, you know, fake up a grassroots movement of, you know, freedom fighters and teabaggers and, you know, I mean, I'm not surprised. And, I mean, is this again one of those issues that, like, everyone knows and understands this and it's just, it's falls into that all too large, too hard pile?
You know, Tom has a great, great quote that he read from a book regarding Nazi war crimes. And they talk to some of the people who were at that time. And they go into the psyche and the psychological mind state of what happens when you're faced. Let's face it, John. We're in a factory of fear, and no one's turning it off. The Democrats are not going to turn off the factory of fear. It's too much political capital.
Hmm. Yeah.
To have it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, you know, the whole doubling down in Afghanistan and all the Iran noise, and now we have, you know, that journalist who's been sentenced to 8 years as a pawn and all of that. So, yeah, I mean, the fear machine continues to churn on.
Look at what's happened. Let me tell you how insane this country is. You know, they just arrested that 89-year-old Nazi war criminal, and they pulled him out on a bed stretcher. He's basically going to die anyways before he hits the trial. But do you see the irony and the humor in the fact that we pull out an 89-year-old, but we can't even have Dick Cheney, Karl Rove,
yeah,
Rumsfeld, or any of these people stand trial for over a million dead?
Well, you know, they still shouldn't go to Spain. That's ended up it seemed like that was going to die out, but it's being kept alive, which,
yeah, I have. Let me see.
There's something to try. And, you know, what happens then? Okay, you know, we don't prosecute them. You were asking before. You know, what happens now? Okay, we don't prosecute them. Then somewhere, some time down the road, you know, Rumsfeld and Cheney go off on some sort of jaunt somewhere, and they end up in some country that is signatory to, you know, Geneva, has their own local laws that say, you know, there is no jurisdiction on war crimes, which is how Spain is doing what they're doing. And suddenly another nation then goes and holds those people accountable that we didn't. What the hell happens then?
You know, it's so similar with other things, like the issue with the Somalian pirates. Well, first of all, they're not all pirates.
Yeah.
They're not all mercenaries. They're not all gunmen.
One
they're
person's
farmers,
pirate
they're
is
children.
The yeah yeah. One person's pirate is another person's coast guard.
Exactly. But what I mean. But here's the thing that the Obama administration, and I will say the Obama administration, because they don't seem to get this. I don't think that's changed to label everyone and say, well, you guys need to understand that you can't take over and hijack boats, and you can't have these waters. Well, you poisoned their area with nuclear chemicals.
Yeah, and overfished their waters.
And then on top of that, John, they have those prison pens that they set up where they just take any Somalian in a 200-mile area radius and send them to the little interrogation camp.
We got a real problem down there, you know, and you know, so many of these hijackings just kind of go underreported because, you know, the companies involved would lose so much money trying to negotiate anything, they just pay actually the ransoms, and you know, because it's less loss and they're able to get on their way. So it's almost become, the pirates have become, you know, the way of basically collecting the damage tax for what has been done to them. And I'm always amazed at so few outlets, news outlets all over, actually will show the other side of the story. And every time this would pop up, there was a Johan Hari, I think is something like that, wrote this great piece about the pirates. And it was months ago. And every time they pop up again, that same piece gets sent around. Like, you know, a whole bunch of people have read that piece and said, this is actually what the deal is. Don't need to write any more about it. You need to just read this and get your head around this. And it makes a whole lot of sense what's going on down there. And, you know, how the Somali government's just completely useless. There's law but no order. And the pirates have created a bit of order. It's similar to what's been going on actually in Fiji at the moment.
This all ties into every single area that we're involved in. You realize that? The Pakistan thing?
Oh.
The drones?
Oh, yeah.
With the drones? Oh, how about this? The Obama administration and even Obama himself. I hate when people do this, John. You don't understand and you can't, or you're just afraid to say it. You don't say to a country which country you've leveled and you say, man, you guys need to step it up. I understand you went crazy and insane and you lost all kinds of family members, but damn, you need to step it up.
I know. It's that it's just like the domestic up by your bootstraps kind of argument.
And you know what? We're so used to that. We're so used to that framing. We're so used to that those talking points. We don't understand.
And that's selling it to the American people. That's not selling anything to the Iraqis or the actual situation. That's just salesmanship to the American people. You know, they got to get all up their fucking asses.
You know, I've caught liberals and progressives saying that step it up line. And I always have to put on the brakes and say, how the hell do you step something up when your whole civilization is leveled?
Yeah, absolutely.
They have to go through just a lot psychologically to want to carry on with a day, let alone step it up. This isn't Suzanne Summers aerobics. I mean...
I totally agree. I mean, you know, I think, you know, as far as the stepping up thing, yes,
yeah.
Obviously, if we're going to get out, roles will need to actually be filled by Iraqis. I mean, there is a certain amount of just factualness to that, but it has nothing to do with their desire to run their own country. It has to do with the fact that they haven't been able to run their own country, or they've had so many roadblocks put in their way that they haven't been able to run their own country. Or, you know, we install people to run the country. You know, it's as though, you know, this war hasn't been going on, or it goes on in some sort of virtual vacuum.
You know, it's the way we've been wired for definitions now, and for ideology. You know, David Simon was talking in the interview, and he said whenever he would tell people directly about the show and give them intricate details, they would always say one thing after that. They would say, so you're a socialist? Because they don't understand, John. None of these people understand. They don't understand. It's nothing to do with socialism.
Right.
It has to do with assessing a situation and telling people what the hell is going on. And in his show, he has an even hand. He has with the police, the press, the educational system, and the drug dealers. They're all making bad calls. All of them. But somehow it comes across. He said it best. He said, "Why do you think on all of the networks we never have what's covered in the actual inner city?" He says they're so afraid of the truth. So what do? We evade that, and we go to medical shows. Then we go to lawyer shows. Then we go to private investigator. And what he's basically saying, this is all designed to take your eye away from the fact of what's happening in the inner cities and what's happening in real communities.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it for a second. Think about it for a second, John. All of this stuff that we are inundated on the TV and networks, Apprentice.
Oh, yeah. Television, Drug of a Nation.
Right, exactly. And it gets worse because look what's happening with all these lawyer shows. This does not help our country at all. It actually poisons the waters because we can't talk about social issues because you know why? We'll be called socialists.
So what kind of lawyer shows are you talking about?
I'm talking about all of the shows that deal with law, like Law and Order. Here's the thing. It's not the writers, even if they do put something that has a social structure into it. It has to do with the fact that they're not covering the other people. They're just covering the lawyers, the doctors, the investigators, and people are getting an imaginary view of what the world is. I know people who don't even realize that there are inner cities in this country now.
What?
Yeah, there are people in this country who don't realize that people are in abject poverty.
How can you not?
It goes back to that idiocracy thing. If you don't study and you don't research and you're just whatever's told to you, whatever's forced to you, we live in a McDonald's culture. I want my McNuggets and my fries.
And I want them now, or I'm calling 911.
I mean, John, it goes back to this. I watched that. Let me tell you something. I watched that Glenn Beck special, and the reason why I watched it is I wanted to see the surreal nature of Ted Nugent. Picture this. Ted Nugent at the Alamo playing guitar, and you got Penn Jillette, who I respect as a comedian and for his show Bullshit, which I think is one of the most amazing shows.
Yeah.
And even this guy doesn't realize that Glenn Beck – he either realizes it or he just doesn't care. But it's either one, or he's insane. he has all this stuff about Bullshit. Why doesn't he do a show on Glenn Beck's Bullshit?
I'm sorry. Every time I watch any of the Glenn Beck stuff, I mean, it's so cartoonish, and it's so he looks like a sweaty clown. And, I mean, it looks like a parody already, you know, that you know, Colbert doesn't even need to do anything to. It's...
Right.
But, the problem is that parody is playing to a very, very small group of people. And the small... don't know very much, and you know it's this red meat, you know, lizard brain type, type people that, you know, you can do this like just completely bullshit populist stuff, and then get like all teary, and you know the close-ups of the eyes and. I just can't.
It's like his excuses. He always says, "I know I'm a moron. I know I'm not very bright." And that's how he's able to get away with it, John. I know I'm kind of crazy, but I may be kind of retarded. I may be kind of stupid.
Yeah, these FEMA camps don't exist, but let me tell you all about them.
Yeah.
It's really bizarre stuff, and I do find, I think it's very telling that this guy is like the hottest shining star over there at Fox at the moment. And I think Bill O'Reilly's just really, really pissed off that someone stole his nutbag.
I tell you what, I would like to see. I would like to see the actual numbers, because you know me, I don't believe statistics when it comes with Fox.
Yeah.
I would actually like to see the numbers via like a hack or something, going through the people's digital cable, and see the actual numbers of how many people watch the Glenn Beck Show. I probably still would be in horror. But but at least I would know. I mean, oh my God, 30,000 people.
Yeah,
I mean, he said 30,000 people. Holy cow!
Yeah.
What are you people doing?
But you know, I mean, there is so. But you might not necessarily believe the numbers that they're putting out, that they're again trying to actually create AstroTurf around the guy to give him attention, as opposed to there actually being, like, people being driven to his show due to the fact that they like him. You know, I wonder how much of it is just people tuning in, especially on the left, just to watch the freak show.
Do you think that this, and this is also ties into the administration, do you think the same for the American people is the same for the same type of symptoms that even our president suffers from by, you know, by giving the cosign to Ed Schultz and people like that, like putting him in the front row? I mean, does this say something even larger about our culture of how whatever's in front of you, you're going to take it and you're not going to search the back aisles, as in a music store,
yeah,
a library?
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's, you know, we're still such in the early days of everything. And
right,
there's this whole mix of things, which I think makes it even easier to distract sometimes, because, you know, we've elected this guy that actually can go out and connect sentences together and, you know, speak on a higher level and, you know, keep people's attention. And when he has decided to do it, come down and actually explain some really cold, hard truths to the American people on certain subjects. And that's all really great. I love having the fact that there's this guy that can go overseas and not look like a complete and utter dork, right? And
I agree.
And can wow them a bit, you know, and get people wanting to talk to us again on a more equal footing. I think that's all really, really great. But I, you know, the guy is so media savvy. I wonder sometimes, you know, and this could be they're still learning, that there was too much trying to work the media than actually dealing with explaining things and actually going out and selling whatever it is that he's trying to sell, which is, you know, basically what half of his job is. Is, you know, we have a concept, here's some legislation, and actually go out and sell the damn thing. But, you know, there's just a lot of showmanship going on at the moment, and I'm wondering if that's at the loss of some balls and some spine.
I wonder, because we have such a good constitutional scholar writing for us on the blogs, Glenn Greenwald, and I know people in Obama's administration read it, I would love to know what is said after some of these cabinet members who are critical thinkers and are constitutional scholars as well, what their conclusions are as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just, you know, all I can say is Barack Obama, don't pull a Bill Clinton.
You know what? Here's the thing about this. I think it is worse than Bill Clinton because of how so many issues are tied to this one particular theme regarding crimes of the past administration. And the fact that, here's the catch-22, we can't call them crimes, though, John, because we haven't investigated them. And we can't investigate them because that will be seen as playing politics
right.
and witch hunt. And the Democrats fall for it every single time. This Machiavellian line, playing politics, a witch hunt.
We're just trying. You need to have an investigation to get at an answer.
That's right. And the fact, here's the bottom line for everyone listening who thinks that it's just because it's the early days. I don't tend to think that. I tend to think it's because people are scared out of their mind. They're afraid of their jobs. They're afraid of their reputation. And they really think that they can hold the country together without any rule of law. And really, for the people, if the NSA is listening and all the organizations, you can't have a functioning country if that's gone.
No.
What does that say? What am I supposed to think? What are you supposed to think? What is everyone supposed to think? And what are they supposed to tell their children? What?
This is the administration that allowed criminals to get away with it.
That's what I'm saying. And then what does that, and you know what, this goes back, this completely goes full circle with what David Simon was saying. Maybe there is no political capital in the rule of law. Maybe there isn't, John. Maybe that's the reason why. Because it's better to have things in chaos. It's better to have people fear that your country is crumbling when, in all actuality, it really is now.
Well, I do think that the American nation is at a really, really, you know, fundamentally important moment in its soon to be history. And if some really hard decisions aren't made damn quick, especially on issues like the torture one. I think, you know, there is a bit of, you know, you could watch the whole thing crumble away into chaos.
Exactly. John, do you know there are 75 homemade currencies in this country right now?
I've been reading more and more. There's just more and more of these local currencies to actually be able to keep some lending going. It's amazing.
Maybe we need to start the horn currency, and that's how you guys can fund your network.
That isn't really interesting, you know, really truly grassroots kind of phenomena that's going on, you know, these local currencies, and I, because there's actually nothing legal, you know, legal, there's no legal issues to you having a currency, you know, and...
Well, you know what, the way Detroit did it, they were smart the way they did it. They didn't call it currency. They didn't call it dollars. They didn't call it anything. They just called it, they call it cheers. Detroit cheer. So that's how they trade.
Spreading cheer.
And apparently, and here's the thing about it. If anyone even wants to stop it, I mean, to me, there's no point to stop. It would be stupid to stop that.
Nah, I diversify. No, seriously, I think a lot of these organizations, you know, you read their charters and whatnot, and
yeah.
You know, they have much more realistic ideas of what needs to be held in reserve and the rate of lending and the idea of usury and interest. Where people are getting a much fairer deal with these institutions. And, you know, there's a little bit more of, you know, like a couple of the ones that are being done by some of the Native American tribes are amazing. You know, they're just like, basically explain to us how us investing in your whatever it is will help our nation. And that has more to do with you getting a loan than virtually anything else. And I think, you know, it's a whole different kind of kettle of fish, man, and there might be something to be learned there. Because that was the other thing about the Tea Party stuff, you know, you see the bunch of the people out there, you know, end the Fed stuff. Now, I actually kind of subscribe to some of that, but not for the reasons that those people were there for, because I think one of the things that never changes or hasn't changed, you know, since, you know, 1912 or whatever, is the Federal Reserve Bank. And so I think these experiments with other things could be something that we could end up learning from, because, you know, the way money and fractional reserve lending runs now is part of the reason that all this thing fell apart, because there was so much of the economy was based on over-multiplied hot air.
Yeah.
And shit that didn't actually exist, and then insuring shit that didn't actually exist, and, you know, it all kind of came from there. So I do love the local bank thing. Hey man, we've been at this for about an hour.
I was going to close it off with I'm going to be writing summaries for your show as well, because I'm writing them for Bob. I have to transcribe three Bob's shows from Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, and then I'll write summaries for your show, because as I was telling Bob, I think this will help a lot of people who don't have the time to listen to these shows, so they can get the idea of what was discussed.
And actually, we've been getting really good about doing proper show blog posts the last few weeks. And so there, over at my blog on the network, there's the links to everything that was in the show tonight. And Gene's been going back actually on some weeks and even putting a track list of everything I played, which just blew me away.
All right. Well, that's cool. Well, John, as always, it was great talking to you.
All right, man. Always good. Always good.
By the way, what's the name of that article that with the computer thing?
I
read it, but.
I'll find it. I'll email it to you. I'll find it. I can't recall off the top of my head.
All right, cool, because that's what we should discuss next week.
Yeah, absolutely. That's actually...
Because this war crimes thing, see, this war crimes thing, this is just an endless circle. It's a revolving door, and you're just going to get more depressed and want to do heroin. Really. I mean, there is no exit to it. There's none.
No, there isn't.
Yeah.
There isn't. Anyway, man, we'll talk.
As always, it's been great talking to you.
All right, take care, my friend. We'll talk to you soon.
Later, man.
All right, man. Bye bye. And that's our good buddy David from Maine. And oops, wrong button. Hey, Sarge, if you're still around, give me a buzz. I'm gonna go out and take a little bit of a break. We're gonna do the we're gonna do the green news with Brad and what's her name? Sorry, I don't have it in front of me. But anyway, from the Brad blog, the green news report, and then we'll come back, and hopefully Sarge will pop up. And so call in in about 5 minutes, Sarge. I'm going to take a little bit of a break here, and we'll be back shortly. Here's one for Gail, a little bit of Jim White. Exactly.
It's Thursday, April 16, 2009.
Goodbye, Tax Day 08. Hello, Tax Day 09. Birds take the long way home, plus solar energy in space.
That was good, Muppets. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this is your Green News Report. Okay, then, here's Miss Piggy, Desi Doyen, with the Green News.
Well, first, tax day is over for another year, at least for those who filed their 2008 taxes on time. But before you completely blot it out of your mind, now is a good time to plan ahead for your 2009 taxes. Specifically, the greatly expanded tax credit for homeowners who make energy efficiency upgrades in 2009. For example, starting this year, homeowners can deduct 30% of the purchase price of any major upgrades like solar panels.
If I add solar panels to my house, if I had a house, I could deduct 30% of that?
30% of the price of the solar panels will then come straight off the top of your tax bill because it's a tax credit rather than a tax deduction.
Yeehaw. I'll take
indeed.
It.
A new study from a British university says that migratory bird species are facing their biggest threat since the Ice Age due to the effects of climate change moving their migration patterns. This study was published in the Journal of Biogeography. It estimates that some 500 million birds migrate every year from Africa to reach their breeding grounds in Europe and Asia. Their evidence suggests that as global temperatures rise at the end of the century, breeding habits will have to shift farther north, that migratory birds will have to fly farther and longer, and in some cases hundreds of miles, which could have a devastating impact on species, especially those that have to cross the Sahara Desert.
So, well, really? So we would have exhausted birds who couldn't make it all the way down
to their winter grounds in Africa, and also there's the pit stops, the habitats where they have to stop over to eat, to rest,
right,
on the way are also vulnerable as well.
And those are disappearing.
Yes, they are.
Wow.
West Coast electricity utility giant PG&E announced a deal this week with a startup solar company that has a novel idea to get solar power from the sun in space. Now, here's how it would work. The satellites...
As opposed to getting solar power from...
The ground. From the sun hitting the ground. Okay, here... This
but
is
it's
how,
still coming from the sun,
okay,
no matter where
yeah,
we...
Yeah, it's...
Right.
Okay, here's how it works. Okay, so the satellites are tricked out with solar panels, and they would capture the sun rays, then convert that solar energy in space at the satellite level to radio frequencies that are then transmitted to Fresno. That is a receiver located on the ground in Fresno, California.
You're transmitting electricity
no,
via
you're
radio
transmitting...
Waves?
You convert the electricity, to the solar energy, into radio frequencies, which is then transferred to the receiving station in California, which would then be converted from radio frequency to electricity that would then go out to the grid.
You can transfer solar energy to radio frequency and then back to solar energy?
Well, not back to solar energy, into electricity.
Okay.
I know, it sounds strange, but they said that the Pentagon even studied this last year and declared that it was feasible. It's just nobody's ever done it. So part of the thing to be aware of is that PG&E is required to sign contracts that show that they're trying to get renewable energy. That doesn't necessarily mean the contracts have to come to fruition to meet their state mandate.
So this could all be just something they're saying, oh, we're putting some money into this for research, and it may never come to pass.
It may not. Well,
although it seems unlikely that a big company like PG&E would put in money to something that was just a ridiculous scheme, right?
And we'll see.
Okay.
A compelling new study reported on in the New York Times.Earth blog and published this week in the journal Nature. Evidence from fossilized coral reefs in Mexico suggests that, yes, sea levels can rise rapidly and actually did so over 100,000 years ago, something along the lines of 6 to 10 feet in under 50 years. The researchers, they studied fossilized coral reefs in Mexico that had been uncovered during construction for a resort, and they compared that with age and growth patterns of reefs elsewhere in the world. Now, critics of the study say the data isn't sufficient to prove that there was rapid sea level rise in the past, but it is certainly provocative enough to merit further study. A nonprofit group has brought a mobile computer classroom to underprivileged children in Uganda. They've powered it with solar panels in a pilot program. They're hoping to train children in Uganda on computers.
This isn't solar panels in space, is it?
No,
these
this
are the
is
real
not. This is
ones
so what they do
the
is
ground.
That they pack up solar okay. panels and computers and tables and teachers and a tent, and they pack it up into their Toyota RAV4, and they drive to remote villages, and they bring their electricity with them because none of these villages have the infrastructure to have their own electricity.
Gotcha.
With the proliferation of products claiming to be green or good for the planet, it's no surprise that some of those products just might not live up to their advertising. A new survey from...
Like the solar energy in space?
That wouldn't necessarily be the same thing.
Radio frequency. I'm still working on that.
I'll show you the study.
I'm going to ponder the...
Okay. Right. A new survey from the company that runs the certification program for Canada has listed the seven sins of greenwashing. That's the practice of making misleading claims about a product's environmental benefits or a company's practices. And they basically say that, just about all the products they examined committed at least one of these greenwashing sins.
And which we're seeing all of these corporations do. These big oil companies, they're saying, we're doing this green, that green. It's unbelievable how much green stuff there is. A lot of it may not be a reality.
May not be true or a reality.
Greenwashing.
Greenwashing.
Okay, for more information on that and much more, please check out our website, greennews.bradblog.com. Once again, want to welcome our new affiliates, Huffington Post Green and the Head On Radio Network. Check out headonradionetwork.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
This has been, until next week, your Green News Report in space.
Everybody, welcome back to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network, and we're going to go straight to the phones. And I believe we got Mr. Sarge. Sarge, you there?
You got me there, buddy.
How you going, mate? I hear you went to a teabagging.
Yeah, I sure did. Leonard Clark and myself, David Link and some others, decided that we didn't want to be left out of the party, so we went and turned up being the party. it was quite an experience, and I relate it very much to the days when I was in Mississippi as a young boy, teenager and stuff, and they would have Klan rallies because the fever pitch of hate and rudeness and obscenity that went on there. The only time I've ever seen it at that pitch, and meanness, just total meanness, was, probably back, in those days.
And I
just couldn't believe it. Leonard and myself, being shy like we are, we kind of spoke out. And, we were actually at one point, encircled by a group of, and I guess this is what's really weird. There was a good number of Republicans, but mostly libertarians, and they were right on the verge of jumping us and doing physical harm to us. And the cops were even concerned about it. And of course they were shoving us and, pushing us around and things of this nature. It got pretty rough. In fact, I don't know where it is, but I understand there's pictures of it on the internet. I'm not exactly sure where they're posted.
I just got to ask you, Sarge. You said that you actually had more problem with the libertarians that were there.
Yeah. It was I'd say about 60%. Of the problems we encountered were libertarians. The Republicans were, that were there, and I say Republicans because, these guys, I really think they were just, middle, institution escapees because they were just completely dumb. One of them was named Bart, and, Bart, he stayed in our face. In fact, I could tell you what flavor gum he was chewing if he had been chewing it. He was so close to me. I could just tell what was going on. This guy, I mean, we were eye to eye, and, he was pushing us and shoving us, and Leonard and I were back to back and just trying to stand our ground the best we could. Then this one dude, I can't remember his name, but I call him Monica Lewinsky because he had this short, stubby cigar, and he was just sucking on it. So apparently he and Monica had gotten together somewhere along the line.
Before you told me he
walked up to us and he goes, you guys just out here trying to start a fight, aren't you? And we said, no, we're out here exercising our constitutional rights, and thanks to President Obama, we feel pretty secure that our government's not going to do anything to us. He walked up to Leonard then, and he's gotten Leonard's face. I mean, he was so close that you couldn't slit a piece of paper between his nose and Leonard's nose. And he was trying to get Leonard to take a swing at him, and he goes, you guys just want to fight. You guys just want to start a fight. Come on, come on, come on. I'll fight you, and with some obscenities in there. And Leonard said, no, this is actually a peaceful protest. If there's anyone that wants to fight, it sounds like it's you.
Well,
and then, of course, that just escalated into a really heated screaming. And finally, I walked over and said, hey, dude, you got a pretty cool little cigar there. You think you're Clint Eastwood? You know, you kind of look like Clint Eastwood with that cigar, buddy. And, of course, that angered him because he couldn't stand that I was making fun of him. But then at the same time, you like Clint Eastwood because he was a tough guy. And so he just really didn't know what to do. And he said, yeah, you guys just want to start a fight. And I said, no, actually, we don't have any interest in starting a fight. And this other guy, Bart, says, well, I'd like to wrestle while we go over here to the grass and wrestle. Was not the brightest group I've ever encountered.
Well, I was really surprised when you said that about the libertarians, because in all this, you know, Fox and Dick Armey, you know, generated, you know, AstroTurf over these Tea Party protests. These things have been happening every year, normally, and it is the libertarians, and the flat tax people that would be out there,
mm-hmm.
Who would be out there, you know, voicing their opinion on, you know, one of their fundamental issues. But it ended up being, to me, hijacked by what you just reported and others reported, that this was really all just cover for a hate Obama fest.
In fact, one of them asked me, and this was a libertarian, because they did identify themselves as a libertarian and a Ron Paul supporter. In fact, they had a Ron Paul sign, and said to me, I guess you even think John Kennedy was a good president. And I said, well, actually, yes, I did. And they laughed and said, John Kennedy, how can you call him a good president? And I said, well, he did lay the groundwork to a lot of racial equality things. And coming from Mississippi, I saw a lot of the things and that improved because of John Kennedy. And any time you improve humanity, I think that's a sign of greatness. And, of course, I was laughed out of the park for that one.
Well,
these people, John, they were just, in fact, I even asked one of them, I said, you know, this problem, when did it start? And they said, well, it started with Jimmy Carter. And I said, well, if it started back then, and of course Ronald Reagan was a big part of it too, I said, if it started back then why do you wait until the first 100 days of Obama's administration to say something? Where have you been the last 30 plus years? And of course, that just set off another round of yelling and screaming and telling us what pieces of, you know, what we were. So, these people, the ones that were more moderate around us, and Leonard and I could hear him saying this and some of the others that were there, they heard people starting to say, you know, I think I'm going to have to rethink this a bit, because I'm really embarrassed by this crowd, and these guys are trying to have a conversation, and they're being treated really bad. So I think it actually changed a lot of the more moderate people around, because they started backing off and saying, you know, I got to rethink this.
Well, I mean, the whole fiasco of these things across the country was, like, so not thought out. Aside from the, you know, using the teabagging terminology, you know, that was just another unfortunate bit of Republicans not having a clue about anything.
Well, you know, one thing I thought about talking with some of these guys and having the discussion with the ones that would discuss without, you know, fear of my life, and believe me, Leonard and I did fear for our life, but in fact, at one point, it got so bad that the cops actually stepped in and told the guys, you're going to have to back off. You know, that's how scary it got, because we were encircled. And from what I understand, the pictures that are online, and I wish I could tell you where they were, it does show just exactly that we were encircled by a mass of humanity. And our friends who were there were saying, we thought you guys were going to get beat up. If the cops hadn't been there, we're sure you would have. So, but it was very vicious, mean.
But you said, were there any numbers when, you know, of people there, or was it, did it look like?
Yeah, I would say there was, maybe upward to 5,000. You know, I wouldn't say there was more than 5,000, but I'd say there were around that number. And the funny thing about it, one of the speakers, and I think it was J.D. Hayworth, but it may have been another one, got up and spoke, and after he came down, one of the local TV stations here started interviewing him and talking about the money that's being wasted in Arizona, and that he was responsible for. And that aired about the teabag, so they got pretty negative coverage on that. And I believe it was a CBS affiliate. But it actually kind of backfired on him, because he had authorized a lot of this wasteful money. And on the report, they actually had money being flushed down a toilet. And then they talked about what this guy had done. So it, in a lot of ways, it actually came back on him in a not what they wanted type.
Well, I just sat back and was watching all this stuff that was going down, and I have you know, your report of the libertarians being aggro is the first I've heard of that, because my thought was that their annual, you know, thing had been hijacked by a bunch of, you know, knuckle dragging, you know, a lot of it racist.
Yeah.
I mean, sheesh, some of the signage that I saw out there was just absolutely atrocious.
I tell you what, John, if you and having conversation, I got kind of sidetracked here, but I was going to say this earlier, but having the conversations with the libertarians that I could talk with without things going just completely haywire. Of course, even they were yelling while they were talking, and it took about 20 minutes in order to get what we could have had in a regular conversation, and about 4 or 5 minutes. But the impression I was left after listening to them and listening to what they had to say, libertarian, you can find it. There are nations that are following libertarian policies as these people describe it. For instance, check out Somalia, check out Haiti, these places where there is no government, and you've got libertarianism. This is probably one of your classic examples of what you would have if you followed the libertarian ideals, because their ideas just won't work.
Well, and I mean, you know, just like, you know, liberals and progressives and whatnot, there's all different types. There's all different types of libertarians. And there are the, you know, the don't tread on me, keep your nose out of my business, you know.
That's all a lot of those signs.
That, and all that, like, I'm cool with. Then there's the libertarians that are just the pot-smoking right-wingers. You know, it happens to be this tent that seems to house a whole bunch of different people that claim themselves to be libertarian, and it just like runs the gamut of a whole lot of things, and you know, I always thought that they were more on the idea of, you know, yeah, less government. Obviously, you know, that could become completely.
Well, we've got a lot of them out here in Arizona. In fact, we had a couple that used to follow me at KPHX, had a show after me, and they have a pretty strong following here. But when you talk with them and talk with Bernie Hancock and Barry Hess frequently, they want us to, the old saying, you know, who was it? I forget his name. Grover Norquist, I believe it was, said, let's shrink government down to the size where you can drown it in a bathtub. And these were these type of libertarians. Hmm. And, of course, I would ask them, well, what do you do in a situation like Katrina? And they told me, well, what you do is you let the churches and the families that are affected deal with it. And I said, well, now how do you build infrastructure through these people? They obviously can't build infrastructure. Oh, well, I guess the government would have to do that. And I said, wait a minute. If government's not big enough to do the job, then nobody can do it, right? Then what you going to do? You're just going to have total chaos. And they said, well, you know what? That may not be such a bad thing. In fact, maybe we should have anarchy for 6 months. In fact, I would like to see anarchy for 6 months in this country. It might straighten Americans out. You know, that's their philosophy.
Well, you know, problem is that, you know, I think too much of the population is just too damn lazy. You know, give me my yeah. American Idol, give me my, you know, whatever other reality thing, and, you know, my six pack of beer because I got to go to work tomorrow and I hate my life. You know,
yeah.
I don't know whether
they don't want to pay taxes. They don't want to pay taxes, but they want to have all the benefits of what you get when you pay taxes. You know, in other words, they want their cake and eat it too. And unfortunately, that's just not going to work.
Well, yeah, I think anything, you know, I think it comes down to that, you know, like, you know, whether it's libertarianism or socialism or any of these other isms, anything mm-hmm. in a purist form is never going to be able to handle, you know, every contingency. No matter how, you know, how right on the thought process might be. But, you know, so, you know, when it's fundamentalists in anything, nothing to, you know, a purely communist system, a purely, you know, we've already seen what happens when capitalism is left unrestrained. We end up in the mess that we're in now, you know, you know, and so I think any of them fall apart when taken to an extreme level. You know, socialism doesn't work when it's 100% socialistic. You know, I think in the libertarian movement there are actually some decent things. You know, the idea of personal freedom and whatnot, but I think it ends up being bastardized sometimes, and also just, you know, you end up in a situation of like, okay, well, then where's the fire department come in? Where's the police department come in? You know, it just goes into la la land. You know?
Well, you know, a lot of our people out here, and I've discovered this through my listening audience at KPHX, have the feeling that, well, we like libertarians and believe in them because they were opposed to Iraq and they didn't like George Bush. And while I certainly agree with those ideas, that's just not enough to base your alliance on, because in a lot of, in many, many other ways and talking with them, they would have handled Katrina as bad or even worse than Bush did. And, you know, after seeing, what they offered to me when they, I talked with them, how they would handle it, I concluded, I'm glad that these people wasn't in charge because they would do just exactly what Bush did. In fact, I even told Barry Hess one time, I said, so what's the difference in what you're doing and what George would do and what George Bush actually did? There is no difference because that's exactly what Bush did. And he said, well, no. I said, well, yes. And I said, I know because I was there. I dealt with this and am still dealing with it. And what you're saying is exactly what happened. So, you know, your ideas, they won't work. And unfortunately, that's a lot of what the libertarians are doing. Their ideas just will not work. And I you know, agree with them on some things because, certainly Iraq was a mistake and it never should have happened. George Bush should have been impeached, yeah. But, you know, I don't think that, shrinking government to the size that you can ground it in a bathtub is going to work.
Yeah.
I don't think depending on, faith-based initiatives is going to work. You know,
yeah, churches don't have helicopters and stuff at their disposal to help get people out of floods. You know,
right.
You know, it's that bigger picture, you know, kind of stuff where the libertarian ideal falls really, really flat. That, you know, you want anything, you know,
like I said, we've got that mindset here in Arizona real heavy. In fact, one of the people who, Ms. Johnson, who is a potential gubernatorial candidate, has said that she would not, if she were governor, she would not take the stimulus money, and she'd just cut taxes and let everybody just fare for themselves. And, of course, we are in...
I can't believe a governor.
In a bad budget crunch here in Arizona to the point where we've actually fallen below Mississippi in the last place in education. Our community colleges, for instance, are losing their support system in a lot of ways. The place that Monique was a director was informed this week that they will be shutting that place down. And this allowed a lot of people to go to college and have child care, but that's going to be going by the wayside. Some of these children will not have a place to go, and it's going to put, it's going to take the parents out of the educational system. So, and this job, Ms. Johnson, that's what she proposed doing is just cut it even more and not have any more money to work on. So, you know, and she's a libertarian and she's a pure libertarian. So, it's just, like you said, it's an ism and it's going to fall flat on its face. So,
yeah.
One thing I'm scared of is that our liberal progressive community is being too sucked in to the libertarian philosophies and to the Ron Pauls of this world, because we agree on some things and they're selling us some bad ideas.
Yeah,
keeping it quiet.
Once you start digging in there, and you start seeing some of the social angles of things, you just like going, no way. We just have you know, rampant poverty, and you know,
if you follow the libertarian, if you want to see libertarianism at work, Somalia, Hades, that's libertarianism. They don't have government to worry about. They don't have these regulations. They just do whatever they want to do. Hey, there's your perfect libertarian state. How's that working out for them?
Well, yeah, it is kind of like the no oversight, you know, way of going about it, you know, that totally
that's perfect libertarianism.
Yeah.
But now, one thing I did want to check, and I got off on that rant, and I'm sorry about that.
That's right.
But another interesting part of the teabag party was that one guy, Bart, was telling us that Obama lied, that Obama had failed the American people, that he wasn't doing his job. And I said, well, okay, let me ask you something. He said he's not keeping us safe. I said, okay, let me ask you something. If he's not keeping us safe, what about George W. Bush? And he says, oh, he kept us safe for 8 years. And I said, wait a minute now, let's see. 9/11 was in 2000, what? 2001, wasn't it, Mark? And he said, well, Bush was in his early days of his presidency, so he can be overlooked. And I said, well, excuse me, but he had been in office over 6 months at that time. Obama hasn't even been in 3 months yet, but you're not going to cut Obama any slack, but it's okay for Bush all those months after he had gotten in office. Bart, isn't that a double standard? And, of course, then I guess he wanted to go over to grass and wrestle or something, but he got in my face and started yelling again. So, but that was,
you made me look
that
stupid.
Was the type of people.
You made me look stupid. I'm going to have to kick your ass.
And one guy in the crowd even made a statement. He said, I wish he would shut the hell up. He's killing us. So, you know, it really was. And, you know, fortunately, so many of them were involved in watching us that we had probably a third of the crowd that was there watching us, and this was going on while they were having speakers. So we had so much of the crowd that there was a good portion of the crowd that learned more from us than they did from the speakers. So that was kind of interesting and fun.
Way to go out there and stir some shit.
Yeah, I mean, these people, they didn't really have responses. They didn't know what they were mad about. They just knew they were mad as hell. And when you talked with them, when you could get them to calm down long enough to get them to talk, you found out that they really didn't know what they were mad about. And they just knew they were mad.
Well,
and someone had told them to be mad, and they were mad.
That's what I, you know, some of the reporting of this stuff, I think it was on this week with Stephanopoulos or whatever, and Peggy Noonan was trying to say, oh, you know, yeah, Fox might have gotten behind this, but, you know, this whole movement, you know, is this wide-ranging, you know, trying to paint it as though, like, the rainbow of America rocked up for these things. And
well, now, the biggest right-wing station here in Phoenix, and I'll give the names, seeing how I doubt anybody listening will tune into their station, but it's KFYI. They actually had a booth set up and were selling merchandise. They had portable potties for the people to use, and Fox actually contributed to that as well. So, it was very well supported by the Republican Party.
You know, and then Glenn Beck setting up.
By the way, they did say that Leonard and myself and the few others that were there, we were being paid by Acorn, and they even knew how much we were being paid. We were being paid $50 to do it.
Oh, really?
Of course, yeah, this was what was said, and we were, they said that we were getting paid by Acorn, and of course, Leonard and I have both, decided we have got to find out who we can contact at Acorn and find out what happened to our $50.
Yeah, really?
Because we didn't know we were getting.
Really? Someone's telling me that you're paying me. Where the hell's my check?
Would you be so kind as to please pass? And, you know, maybe the next time it would be nice if you would even go so far as to let us know in advance that you were paying us. You know, maybe if we even had some contact in here, you know, sign some contract or something. But, of course, we had no contact with him.
Well, and you know, I still think one of my favorite bits of that whole day is the fact that Glenn Beck, you know, held his event at the Alamo.
Yeah.
And I'm just
sitting
there.
Yeah, and I think the Tea Party worked just about as well.
Oh, he's just... But I swear, man, it's like the last, you know, 1 in 10 Americans that's just... Can't stand it that, like, you know, oh, my God, the gays can get married. And, you know, we're actually, you know, looking at climate change, and we're not going to let, you know, religion decide things that science should. And, you know, just these few things that have actually happened and changed. And I think that they're just losing their minds. And this is, you know, again, you know.
Well, I think one of the cops really kind of reflected it better than anybody the whole day long, because when we first got there, he was all for the teabagging party, and he was really, really watching, and he was kind of going, yeah, I agree with these people, you know, and talking about the teabaggers. And then after having to deal with it for several hours, he made a statement. He said, you know, when I first got here, I was kind of for these people, but now after everything that has expired and I've listened to these people and I've seen how these teabaggers conducted themselves and listened to what everybody was saying, I don't feel the way I did when I came here. I think we gotta work with the president, and I think he hadn't been in office long enough that it's time to throw him out. And so he said, it's changed my mind. I think that's probably a lot of what happened around the nation.
But, I mean, the whole thing's insane, mate. You know, they're protesting against tax law that was actually put in place by the previous administration at the moment. And, you know, it's just so completely, none of it makes any sense.
It doesn't, and what they've got to understand, and the principal thing, the primary thing that we saw was hatred, and it was undirected hatred or misdirected hatred, because hatred can serve you well, anger can serve you well, I guess I should say, instead of hatred. It can work for you if you use it in a constructive manner, like Dr. Martin Luther King. He knew how to do it. And the Vietnam War protesters, for the most part, knew how to do it. And I think we showed that we knew how to do it in the protests against Iraq and things of this nature. But you can't go out and perpetuate hate and expect people to fall for your movement. Because hate scares people. Hate turns people off. And these people, they were about hate and anger. And I think people were just tired of it. And so I think actually they just, they miscalculated the American people. And I don't really think they were that successful.
And I think a lot of the American people actually can tell the difference between grassroots and astroturf. And this was so obviously astroturf.
Yeah.
You know,
it wasn't. Definitely was not a grassroots movement.
Yeah, absolutely, man. But hey, Sarge, really good to talk to you, man. I'm gonna head off and
thank you.
I'm gonna play a little bit of music before we get out of here. But you know, I'm glad that you went down there, because I love hearing firsthand accounts. You know, especially when you're just going to see, you know, what the hell is going on.
Well, one thing about it, John, I will say, if you ever have a chance to attend something like this, don't do it.
Well, I appreciate you doing it.
Thank you, John.
All right, man. Take care, Sarge.
Bye-bye.
All right, that's our good buddy, Sarge, and you can check him out on his weekly radio show, coffeewithsarge.com. And, yeah, we're going to take a quick break and come back and
get some music out to round up the rest of the evening. So where are we going to go? Let's go here. Selling the Drama. We're going to go back to the live album. Just for some reason stumbled across this. Haven't listened to it in ages. And some really great tracks on here. And, you know, I guess, you know, I don't know. What David was talking about before, you know, nothing changes, you know. And is this all just selling drama? Anyway, here you go. Live off of Throwing Copper. You listen to Foxed Up on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be back in just a few minutes. And to burn the crowd that has a name. And to right or wrong. And to weak or strong. It is known. Another one there from Throwing Copper and Live, and just kind of two artists for the day kind of that I had lined up, one of them being for Gail, a bit of Jim White, and we were listening to some of the Jim White stuff yesterday while doing chores, and Gail said, you know, pointed out a couple of tracks as they were playing yesterday, going, ah, this is one I'd request for music time on your show, and then I email her and say, hey, what were those tracks? And she's like, I can't really remember the name. But I think I deciphered from her clues. One would be this, a track called The Last Kind Words. And this is David Johansen and Larry Saltzman play this track. And it's a very, very cool track. And this is off of the soundtrack for the film that Mr. Jim White did last year from Searching for the Wrong Eye Jesus. So this is not necessarily Jim White, but off of this album, Various artists for the film. David Johansen, Larry Saltzman, The Last Kind Words.
That's a great song, man. That's Geechee Wiley.
Yeah, it is a great song. I'm actually going to go and play one of Jim's tracks here. And got to find it. Oh, I could do that. Yeah. Not that one. Where is it? It's hiding on me. Ah, here we go. I just love this track because it's just so groovy. And the fact that I know that this was played through the massive PA system that was here when the Pope came for Ute Day. Just knowing that this was used to fire up the delay speakers all around town in preparation for the Pope's arrival just gave me great reason to smile. So off of Drill a Hole in the Substrate and Tell Me What You See, If Jesus Drove a Motorhome, Jim White.
Here's a little waltz that I very seldom play because very few people like it. Jesus drove a motor home. I wonder would he drive. Pedal to the metal, real slow. Checking out the stereo. Cassette playing Bob Dylan. Motivation tapes. Tricked up in a bagel with the tie-dye drapes. If Jesus drove a motor.
Jim White. But moving on, you know,
First of all, Will in Chicago is saying that he's been out apartment hunting. I feel for you. That is one of the most soul-sucking, pain-in-the-ass things that anyone has to go through, is to go and find a new flat to live in. And, yeah, that's just never fun. But we've had the conversation amongst ourselves. I think Bob and I had the conversation one night on the horn section. You know, the American thing about tipping, which people don't do in other countries the way that we do in the United States. And, you know, to explain tipping to anyone that's not from the United States, I say, watch the opening scene of Reservoir Dogs. That lays it out. That whole Harvey Keitel tirade about, you know, the uneducated mothers, blah, 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 blah. Second on the list, we'll go back to the band Live. Is this great little two and a little over a half, minute track. Called Waitress. And I reckon that this sums it up beautifully. So this, you know, you need to explain it to anybody. Pair that first scene of Reservoir Dogs and this track.
Come on, baby, leave some change behind. She was a bitch, but I don't care. She bought a food out on time. Wore a funky bread in her hair. Come on, baby, leave some change behind. She was a bitch, good enough to leave some change. Everybody's good enough for some change. The girl's got family, she needs cash to buy aspirin for her pain. Everybody's good enough for some change. It's a fucking shame. Come on, baby, leave some change behind. She was a bitch, but I don't care. She bought a food out on time. Wore a funky bread in her hair. Everybody's good enough for some change. We don't get the flu, we all get AIDS. We've got to stick together after all. Everybody's good enough for some change.
Another one from Live there. Okay, ELO's made a request. Now I just have to see if I can find the dang song. I'm looking, ELO. I know what it is that you want. It's locating it. That's the tricky part. So, pardon me. But as we do every single show, as I'm looking for it, Hello, hello, hello. Not there. Okay. Not Boy, it's all hiding on me. I hate when this happens. Don't mind me, I'm finding stuff. Okay. While I find the other one, as we do every show, the words to live by. Mr. Ferranti, and Stay Human.
Starvation is a creation of the devil, the rebel. I'm bringing food to the people like a widow, bringing flowers to a grave in the middle of the city. Isolation is a window to be surrounded by a million other people, but feel alone like a tree in the desert, dried up like the skin of a lizard, but full of color like the spots of a leopard. Drum and bass pull me in like a shepherd, scratch my itch like a needle on the record, full of life like a man gone to Mecca, sky high like an eagle up soaring. I speak low, but I'm like a lion roaring. Baritone like a Robeson recording. I'm giving thanks for being human every morning, morning, morning. Because the streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. Can I hear it once again? Boom bap. Tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. Can I hear it once again? Boom, bop, I tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. Be resistant the negativity, we keep it at a distance. Call for backup and I'll give you some assistance. Like a lifesaver deep in the ocean. Stay afloat here upon the funky motion. Rock and roll upon the waves of the season. Hold your breath and you're underwater breathing. To be rhyming without a real reason is to claim but not to practice a religion. If television is the drug of the nation, satellite is immaculate reception. Beaming in, they can look and they can listen. So you see, don't believe in the system. To legalize you or give you your freedom. You want rights? Ask them to read them. But every flower got a right to be blooming. Stay human, because the streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. Can I hear it once again? Boom bap. But tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. But can I hear it once again? Boom bap. But tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. Because all the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. Because all the freaky people make the beauty of the world. Aha. We saw the freaky people make the beauty of the world. Stay human. You see why 2K and 2 is a moment in time we find that we can open up a heart that's locked or been broken by the pain of words not spoken, nor shot by guns are still smoking. Cartwrights out on the Ponderosa, or drive by banging Testarossa. We need to heed the words of Dalai Lama, or at least the words of your mama. Take a mental trip to the Bahamas. Steam your body in a stereo sauna, sauna, comma. Because the streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. But can I hear it once again? Boom bap. But tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. But can I hear it once again? Boom bap. But tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. But can I hear it once again? Boom bap. But tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. But can I hear it once again? Boom bap. But tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. Because all the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. Ha 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 ha. Because all the freaky people make the beauty of the world. Stay human.
Yes, and okay, by request, ELO asked for this, haven't played it for a while. Ben Folds 5, Mr. Ben Folds, who made Australia his home up until about a year ago. I hear he went back to the States recently, but this is just a classic of his. Ben Folds 5, there are only three guys in the band. Song for the Dumped.
What?
That song really is a bit of genius. It's just so raucous. I mean, you know, that sounds like a drum kit, a bass player, and a piano with the fascia all ripped off in a room. It really is a fun song. Great call, ELO. Okay, going to squeeze another Jim White in here before we get out of here. I think we got just enough time. This is kind of a short one. This is a band, this is an act called 16 Horsepower, also off of the soundtrack for Searching for the Wrong-Eyed Jesus. This is called Black Soul Choir. Well, there you go. There's a bit more of that stuff off of the Jim White movie soundtrack from, I guess it might even be a couple of years back now. But that's it. That's it. It's 3 hours. It's gone. It's over. It's history. Holy crap. Big thanks to Gene, the news ninja, news producer for the show. ELO, thanks for posting today on the blog. Thanks to Ben Birch for everything that he does. The streaming and the archives, we just, you know, we'd be screwed without you. And, whoops, it would help if I stop things before I start playing other things. Oh, that was really smooth, John. Let's try that again. There we go. That's a little bit better. But thanks for being here, folks. This has been Foxed Up on the Head On Radio Network. You want to connect with the show? Check us out at foxdup.headonradionetwork.com or twitter.com/foxedup. There's a bunch of places. And as we say here on Foxed Up, be good, be green. We'll see you next week.
And the sign said, long-haired freaky people need not apply. So I tucked my hair up under my hat, and I went in to ask him why. He said, you look like a fine, upstanding young man. I think you do. So I took off my hat, I said, imagine that. Me working for you. So I jumped on the fence and yelled at the house, hey, what gives you the right to put up a fence to keep me out or to keep Mother Nature in? If God was here, he'd tell you to your face, man, you're some kind of sinner. Membership card to get inside. Around the plate at the end of it all, I didn't have a penny to pay.